男神应该换羽呼风，男神应该一身武功，男神应该怒气冲冲，男神天不怕只怕穷，我冇得拣，我要让这。Welcome to Podcast on Fire Network bonus episode 42 on Fooling Around, Jianghu and Life After Life. So welcome to this website exclusive and therefore website only bonus episode on one Alan Tam movie and one George Lamb movie. Making this the Alan Tam crapping hour, George Lamb defaming sessions, Team Tam, not Team Tam, Lamb or Lame show. Which if you abbreviate that, that becomes something that you're going to have to figure out for yourself. But rest assured, going back to these two occasionally good actors won't disrupt the official count, meaning we've done the Alan Tam crapping hour, we've mathematically concluded that I was Team Tam and that Phil G was Team Tam till Tam. Jesus Christ, it's early. Team Tam!
Team Tam, Team Tam, Team Tam, three times fast, come on!
Ring up Team Tam on the till or whatever. I think, by the way, George is mathematically lame. Phil G thinks he's lamb, mathematically, statistically. And that's who's with me, by the way. Not George Lamb, but Phil G, who's here with me to discuss two more movies. We'll explain why we're even doing this. But we won't disrupt the official count, because that could mean we're back to a tie, and we're not going to risk that.
let's not do that again. No. But thanks. No, it's good to be back. It's good to some lamb and some tam together. It's quite a meaty course, really. So looking forward to this one. Well, or am I? We shall see.
Well, why these two movies then? Well, Fooling Around Jianghu from 2016 is Alan Tam's latest lead role. I heard he has an appearance in the Winners biopic, Winners being the pop group he was in with Kenny B and Anthony Chan. There was a biopic out this year, 2018, called House of the Rising Suns, directed by Anthony Chan. But obviously a younger actor is otherwise depicting Alan Tam in that movie, but they have like a cameo at some point in the movie. And Life After Life is an early George Lamb movie I simply didn't pick for main coverage because I simply didn't. We restricted it to 9 movies. I wanted it to be somewhat relatable, maybe throw in some action, some drama, what have you. And I was aware of Life After Life, but I simply didn't pick it. But when there was a chance to just go back and unofficially do a Team Tam or not Team Tam, Lamb or Lame, then why not pick it? But why we didn't pick a recent George Lamb movie? Well, he doesn't have many acting roles nowadays, or doesn't pursue them, but he is in the new Jingle Ma movie, Europe Raiders. So we might return to your ears to check that one out, but that's the status of it all. I'm sighing because I'm no fan of Jingle Ma, either Raiders movies. I mean, they're disposable entertainment, but superb cinematographer and not a exciting director as such. He's the director of Silverhawk as well, which was not the world's most successful critically and quality-wise Michelle Yeoh vehicle and things like that. So but let's get to it. I hope otherwise, even though we might release this early next year, who knows, but I hope otherwise things are going well, Phil G, because in real life outside the podcast and all of that, you've done some major changes. You've moved, and as you said off air, you've got your own room.
I've got my own room. After 15 years, I've got my own room. Yeah, so it's quite exciting. So I've got all my Blu-rays, DVDs, Laserdiscs. Yes, I've got Laserdiscs, folks. Video CDs. Yes, look it up, kids. Don't worry about it. The shelves are all there. The cabinets are there. I've got some action figures in there. And show you, in fact, looking at me, Bruce Lee's about to go up. It's exciting. And a massive TV on the wall. And here we are on a podcast as well in my own room. So, yeah, it is quite exciting. More exciting, and if people haven't checked that, they should do. I've also got a YouTube channel. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there's a YouTube channel for Easter Film Fan.
Are you going to do reaction videos, unboxings, like the kids do?
So, yeah, it's all good stuff. Yeah, it's been exciting times. So, yeah.
What was the movie festival that you went to? Even though when we released it, it will be months apart. But was it a local, or did you travel to get to?
No, I travelled down to London for the Fighting Spirit Film Festival. Thanks all involved in that. Got some great interviews with Scott Adkins himself, the debt collector that was on down there, and Iron
How did
Vengeance.
Scott find the time? He works a lot.
Oh man, that bloke is just constant. I know a friend that had met him and stuff, and he said literally he was there to do a seminar, and then he was flying off to LA. He's all over the place. But you know what? He's really relaxed. It was the first time I'd met him. I had a conversation with him, chilled out. You can see it, like I say, on YouTube. Jesse V. Johnson's there, the director, Selena Lowe, Luis Mandela, all them. It's great. And Iron Vengeance as well with Ross, Brian Larkin, and Fleur. It's yeah, and then a young guy called Max Raposi as well. I did an interview with him. So it's all on the YouTube channel, Eastern Film Fans. It was exciting, it was great. Had lots of fun down there, and yeah, it was a great event. I look forward to the next one, and it's just another branch of Eastern Film Fans, and another avenue for us to support, films, the making of them, and go out and buy the film. But Debt Collector, definitely worth a look, and Iron Vengeance as well. So yeah.
And Ross is filming the sequel to Iron Vengeance, I saw on social media, so it's not a definitive story, that is.
Yeah. So they signed up straight away. Vinnie Jones is the lead villain in that. They were literally going through that. And Max Raposi, that I interviewed, he's actually got a little role in there as well. So I didn't know anything about it, and he's got a role, so that's great. So big things from him coming up, and yeah, I'm looking forward to Ross and Vengeance 2, and hopefully we'll get to another film festival back end of maybe next year, and see him again and interview him once more. So yeah, it's been very very exciting.
Very, very cool. You've always been supportive, and it must have been fun to kind of externalize your movie fandom a little bit.
Yeah.
Like to talk to actual creators rather than just keep it on screens and things like that. So.
You know what? It's a different thing. You quite know. I mean, Scott Adkins, I've been chasing for years. I mean, he's a local lad. He's only Sutton
Oh, is it
Coldfield.
really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. He's only local Sutton Coldfield. So he goes to a gym not far away. I won't give the location because we'll have swarms of people there. And I have a friend that goes to that gym who's been hassling my mate, who Eastern Film Fans wants an interview with you.
Yeah,
I think
that always helps, hassling.
Yeah, that always helps. So I've been after him for years. So I was a little bit nervous, I have to say, and stuff. But once I got into the flow of it, I was fine. But yeah, it's another media outlet, so it's different from doing over the phone or a Skype, or just generally, literally face to face doing a video, presenting that and putting it out there. It's another way to get that out there, another way to promote film. I like my action film, but film in its totality. And here we are back to the Asian films, my love, and hopefully everybody enjoys it, even if we didn't enjoy the films in their totality.
Yeah, that might be the case. Well, let's get into it then. First movie, we're not going to do them by release order, but we're going to do them in sort of a series order, because Alan Tam came before George Lam in terms of our coverage. So the first movie in this website exclusive bonus episode is Fooling Around Jiang Hu. It's not a serious movie, as the title might suggest. It's from 2016, and plot from the Love HK film review of the film, and they hated this one. So it reflects that maybe a little bit in the review. I only cut out the plot, obviously. So, Fooling Around Jiang Hu stars Alan Tam as triad boss Golden Alan, who's in a mild gang war with the far younger Dragon Mountain, played by Jordan Chan. Their rivalry involves mostly uninteresting shtick, until Dragon's wife Christine, played by Christine M, angles to trick Alan by pretending to feud with Dragon. That confused me already, but I don't care. Then that plot line is shelved, while the story delves into Alan's past and how he lost his true love, Lok Ling, played by Jamie Chick, and once participated in a singing contest. So yeah, that's the sort of it has strands, this movie. And as for short opinions, disorganized, unfunny, and 85 minutes of Hong Kong cinema wacky triad comedy stuff failure. All are to blame, Philgy, even though Alan Tam doesn't sing this on his own. In fact, he gets the one and only laugh in the movie. I'll single that out. Well, it's actually a fun gag. Effing gag in the entire movie. God damn it, what a foolish movie, if you will.
Why? I can't describe why. Okay, Alan Tam, why would you come back and then do that? I don't understand. It's just...
Maybe it conceptually looked good on paper, this comedic dissection of the triad lifestyle and that it's foolish. And maybe on paper it looked good.
Oh, yeah, an emoji turd looks good. But, you know, it doesn't mean that... No, it just stinks. It really is bad. You know, I mean, bless Alan. I mean, it would have been 66 when
looks
he did
good.
It.
So looks
he's
good.
Looking good. You've got to say he's looking good. And let's face it, he does get to sing quite a bit. So, you know, he must have been, bang on, I'm doing that. I'm coming back. You know, that's his forte. He loves a little bit of the singing our Tam does. But why do this movie? Oh, no, it's just...
What's the main problem? Is it not funny? Is it hard to understand? Or
it's not funny. If we start from the beginning, I like the start because it's something different. Your radio host kind of telling the story. Okay, that's an interesting concept. It's got concepts in there, but just in its entirety, it doesn't work. And if it's supposed to be a comedy, it is, and it's just not funny. I think I raised a smile. I don't think you got a laugh, and that was about it. And therefore, it fails as a movie. And, you know, for everything we were about to discuss, I guess.
It's the directorial debut of otherwise actor and writer Lam Chiu Wing. And indeed, there is a concept here to be pretty free with your style. Break the fourth wall. Again, have the narration by this radio DJ that's like the, you know, the official voice of Jiang Hu or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is what it is. It's not particularly compelling or... funny, but it doesn't paint the Jiang Hu, the triad lifestyle, triad world, as a scary, dairy place, because Alan appears as this almost playful uncle that explains to us, the fourth wall breaking, what the triad's lifestyle and world is. It has self-contained law and authority, it takes care of itself. And then Lam Chiu Wing starts to set up this quick-cut, free-for-all, breaking the fourth wall style. And then it falls apart pretty damn quickly. We got Jordan Chan's first scene. You know, he's literally fooling around. He is found out by Christine. He's with another woman. He's getting oral sex under the table. And she throws a shoe at him. The shoe sticks to his face. And it's a cartoon. And that was the first sign of this is not landing as such. Nothing wrong with trying, but it doesn't land as such, and I was kind of sad because Jordan Chan is usually super reliable, but he is left out to dry here to try and sell the foolishness of it all, and it simply doesn't work. And when it doesn't land from the beginning, when hammy actors and hammy acting don't bring it home, then you got a struggle ahead of you. I could totally sense this early that this is not going to be pretty. It doesn't...
It was the opening scene and, Christine, I bless, why waste yourself? Again, come back and do something. I don't recall her being in a lot recently again and then and doing this. I'm like, really? And it just sets the tone and I'm literally sitting there thinking and watching it in my nice new room, by the way, folks. You know what I mean? I want to watch a decent film.
Did I mention I had a new room all to myself?
Yeah. Kenny B, why have you done this to me? Why am I supposed to have happy memories in this room? Why would you give me this?
I'm the Montgomery Burns of this podcast network. Like, yes, yes.
Yeah. But, and this is the problem, you see, Alan Tam and Jordan Chan. It just doesn't work. They're just wasted. Why he's come back and done this? It's just there's nothing there that grabs you. I vaguely recall going into it that at some point I don't know if I can say enjoying it. Maybe it was just that bad that I had to enjoy it. and I felt like it was going to go somewhere in the middle, which was weird for me. I don't know. Maybe there was some kind of a plot I was following. Maybe I was grasping onto the something of, yes, maybe they could be at least be okay. But I think that soon left me.
The fact that a Hong Kong movie exaggerates this world is nothing new and something I usually like, but obviously when it's done right. I don't know if you remember the movie that Dante Lam directed called Jiang Hu, The Triad Zone, starring Tony Leung Kauffai, Sandra, Anthony Wong. It's a crazy movie. Anthony Wong comes out of something into the movie, and he's General Guan, the god General Guan. And it's a concept that works because all of a sudden that happens and Tony Leung reacts to this and goes, huh? And then he's in the modern world and watching pornography on the TV. But there was a focus there to get tone right, to get banter right, better writing, of course. And I like when the triad lifestyle on film is deconstructed, because even shortly after Young and Dangerous, which arguably glamorized that lifestyle, movies started to deconstruct it, started to make fun of it. Like Wai Kar-fai's movie at Milky Way called Too Many Ways to Be Number One, which is also a crazy free-for-all. It mixes the style that Run Lola Run and Sliding Doors did, meaning that there are different events depending on if they go to this place or if they go to another place. And that also worked because the actors were on board with the comedy of it all. There was more clever writing. Here, they want to be that. They want to be good, but it's very evident early on that they aren't. They simply aren't the tools here to get this light tone to triad tropes correct. And especially, I mean, if I'm going to grant the movie anything, when it sticks to the Alan Tam, Jordan Chang, Christine, and their little twisty-turny plot, that's fine. Then it switches to a completely nonsense plot involving, I don't know if you looked up the actor, but his name is the guy who saves the girl that delivers the food carts that works for social welfare. The guy who turns up is called Baby John Choi. The young, handsome triad that appears like the hero. So it's a romanticized version of this world. She falls in love with a triad. And that's Baby John Choi. And that's when the movie started to fall apart for me, because this thread has so little to do with the movie that it becomes disorganized to the point where, as the Love HK film review said, that it seems like there were different teams working on this and then they just smashed it all together.
Absolutely. It does. It's so fragmented. Like I say, there's, and I've said that, when it, and you've said exactly the same thing, when the three kind of main are together and that kind of plot line there is something there, and that's what I think that I was watching. But then you put the other elements in, and it just seems to have been, as you say, kind of mashed together from something else, a completely different movies, and then squashed into that it became. And it didn't become much of anything, to be honest. I mean, it's supposed to be a comedy, and it didn't hit any register, any lifting of one's cheeks to make you smile. There was nothing there for me to be joyous about, and that was the trouble. Apart from seeing Alan Tam, which is, you know, it's good to see Alan. It's nice to see him on the screen and stuff looking good, but, you know, there wasn't anything for him, not to get his considerable acting skills around, but, you know, he has his moments, he can do, but he needs something, and that script and that film was not the thing to be doing.
Exactly. I mean, and then it goes through scenarios like this USB stick they keep looking for, and Jordan Chan mistakes it for them looking for like a spy or someone else in the triad. Mm-hmm. So they're doing jokes about by that he's mistaking it for a sex toy or something. Then the split screen comedy, and the director Lam Chewing continues to do the fourth wall stuff, and then echoes sound cues or soundtrack cues from Pulp Fiction and Ennio Morricone. And that can be okay when done right. Sometimes Quentin does it okay itself on his own, and when he makes his movies, he peppers them with like sound cues. Here, it's just wannabe stuff from a director that clearly feels inexperienced and is not able to insert such things.
Style over substance.
Oh yeah, for sure. And the style is a very compelling or creative to boot either. I mean, there's even a scene where she is Moon, I believe her name was, who falls in love with baby John Choi. He falls, not he, but she gets kicked down a flight of stairs, and they have a slow motion shot where she's falling in the air, lying like horizontal in the air. Then they cut to her talking to the camera and being very philosophical about something. And I was like, this is just someone allowed to insert any random idea, hoping it will land. And it's quite annoying, really, because it's just trying so hard to charm the pants off us. And it's a wild structure with no charm, I think I wrote in my notes. And then when it cuts to Alan's backstory, we're supposed to laugh that old Alan is playing young Alan. Not really. And that's not his fault, I think, because that's what they give him. And then you go up and perform. And you should know Alan Tam needs more than just go up and perform. He's not that good of an actor that you can leave him and to save your movie.
To his own devices. He needs something to work with, you're right. You know, we've covered, you know, the ones that listen to the show, and maybe you listen to the first time and you go back and do the Team Tam or Not Team Tam series, you know, we've covered it. If he's given the right material, he can do something with it, you know, but he needs to be given something. He can't do it on his own, bless. Or he needs a very strong supporting cast to elevate him as well. That's no offense to Alan. He's done great. But, yeah, he's a singer. Exactly. And he can sing. And he gets to sing in this. So I'm sure he loved it. It's great. You know, he's singing all over the gaff. You know, and he's the reason. And he probably gets it. If you look at it, he probably gets it when he saw it. Hey, great. I'm a character. I'm this person that becomes a triad member because, you know, I didn't win a contest for singing. Oh, this sounds great. It's about singing. You know, it's what he does, loves to perform. He can do that. But it's just a mismatch of ideas that just never works. And as you say, it's just stuck to the main characters and done something. There was something salvageable there. But as you say, there was just so many different ideas thrown in. Note to filmmakers, it just doesn't work. Run with what you've got. If you want to be experimental, fine, do shorts and then come back to it and then find what fits. This doesn't fit. Like I say, it just seems that like several different people had their hands all over it and it was cut to nonsense in the end. Whatever we saw was just that. It was just nonsense.
The funny thing is, I've got a good example of when a performer in this movie is nigh on intolerable and anonymous, and then you see another movie and all of a sudden your perception of him change. Let's talk Baby John Choi again. I saw a movie it was on my local Netflix, and we don't have many Hong Kong movies on local Netflix, and it's a movie from a few years ago called The Way We Dance by director Adam Wong, who did Magic Boy and several very charming independent movies. He had not done a movie for a while, and he did this youth drama dance movie, and it was terrific. And Baby John Choi essentially plays, they don't ham it up as such, but essentially he's slightly older than, by 5, 6, 7 years than the female character. So he's essentially the old master. They play a little bit with that, but it's not about parodying kung fu tropes or anything. Mm-hmm. But he is the old god. And it's a charming movie, and he is charming. And it shows that even young performers that seem anonymous on one side, then you give them a project with belief and a developed concept and writing of note, then your perception completely changes. And you stop thinking about the fact that he's calling himself in movies Baby John.
Well, yeah. That,
I think he's a rapper, but I'm not sure about
well,
that.
Does it really?
Yeah. But if you can find The Way We Dance on your local Netflix, give it a chance. It's a very charming movie, and not this cloying youth movie or anything. That's an example of that. Hey, want to hear about the only joke in the movie that I thought was funny?
Yes, please.
And it happens through Alan Tam, so I'll give him props for that. At one point, the storyline is that Alan Tam reconnects with a romantic interest from the past. And the movie tries to make these points about Golden Alan putting Triad Life behind him and Jang Hu aside to reconnect with a past love. That's fine. And they have a scene on the street where they're talking, and he says that he has scars, and I think he's made tattoos that go over these scars. But regardless, he's made tattoos to remind him of his journey. And he has on each arm train rails, train tracks. And he puts them together. He puts his hands together, his arms together. And he says, don't they look like a train rail? They're essentially children's drawings. And the reaction from his leading lady, Jamie Chick, is when he says, do they look like a train rail? And she silently shakes her head. No. And I thought that was funny because he's relied on that yeah, for it to be poignant to him. And it looks like crap.
It was mildly entertaining. I'll give you that, maybe. It was, yeah, I'll give you that one.
It was the only thing I found, Phil.
Yeah, exactly. That's the only thing. That doesn't save a movie, just mildly entertaining. But I do recall the scene, yes. It was, yes, mildly entertaining. But to be honest, I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Well, my notes are already over. So that's fine.
I tell you what, I had four lines of notes, and nothing was really particularly good. Everything kind of involved around Alan singing A Golden Finger, some film references that pop up. After, you know, 40 minutes in, that was it. I was just, will this ever end? Is there anything funny? I was just looking out for a gag I could bring and share with everybody. At least you found something that was entertaining. I just couldn't find anything entertaining about this movie. So by all means, go out there and find it. But on your heads be it.
Maybe you felt a little bit peckish after seeing so many egg tarts in the movie. Maybe that was a good thing.
Yeah, probably. Hey, the egg tarts looked all right, to be fair. I thought, yeah, they looked all right.
But now you don't want them anymore because the movie as a whole... Blue. All right. As for availability, this is a movie, Fooling Around Jang Ho, is available on VCD, DVD, and Blu-ray in Hong Kong. If you want to pick it up, a DVD will do fine, in case you simply must. And we opted to do that, to do our bit, to support the release, because you never know, it might be good, might not be good. But I don't recommend shelling out extra money just to see it in high definition or anything. I mean, heck, even grab a VCD if you just want to test it out and then chuck it when you're done with it. I don't know, but do pick it up because you can. That's a little support in for physical releases despite disliking the movie. So there we are. Okay, we're gonna do a musical break and then we're gonna look at the other movie in this bonus round of Team Tam or Not Team Tam, Lamb or Lame, and it's the George Lamb movie Life After Life. It's a horror movie and it's from 1981, and we'll be back after a musical break listening to some wonderful music from George Lamb at the very end of the movie. There's his requisite song, and we'll be back in a short bit to discuss that movie. 悲哀喜乐，似是游戏，新的一日总化会至，但求命运花。And welcome back in the second review of this special bonus episode on the website only. It will never go on iTunes or any of the pod catches up there. So it's a little reward to you who stick with us. We'll give you some exclusive content and the exclusive unofficial Alan Tam crapping our George Lamb defaming session. We'll conclude with our review of the George Lamb movie Life After Life from 1981, and a plot from the IMDb user Onos. When a man is hired to enhance a fashion show, which is George Lamb's character of Raymond, he decides to go to a puppeteer and use Chinese puppets to enhance the show and the clothes and what have you. His interest in the show becomes a personal one when he meets one of the models, played by Flora Cheung from Duel to the Death, and romance blossoms as a result of this. An old woman loans Raymond him her antique puppets on the condition that he not keep them in the house with him, or grave misfortunes will result. As one might expect, he ignores the warning and then starts to experience a few accidents and unusual occurrences, including being knocked out by what he thought was a puppet and seeing flashes of a murder while he was unconscious. And as for short opinions, let me get mine out of the way first. It's solid, it's atmospheric, and quite a coherent horror movie, mixing strands of cycles of fate, reincarnation, it's possibly a ghost movie, and does so with professionalism thanks to a sync sound in Cantonese. We get to hear George again. And there is a know-how by the director on in terms of how to craft atmosphere and not just rip off atmosphere or imagery from other movies. And George is a decent anchor, and he comes off respectably, despite acting more hysterical than we're used to. But he does an okay job. So that's my short opinion of Life After Life. What do you think of Life After Life, Phil?
Yeah, I kept this one under wraps a little bit because sometimes we discuss films and sometimes we don't. I didn't on this one because I just thought I'd bring it today for you. I loved it. I loved it.
Cool.
I loved it, I have to say. Yes, maybe it was just the after the last film I watched, elevated to a whole new level.
What was it, creepy for you or more moody?
Atmospheric, I guess. There was an ambience to it. It was atmospheric. There was an ambience to it. There was a mood to it. It worked. And there was so much to enjoy about it as well. And and George Lamb's performance as well. And, you know, again, Lamb or Lame, we've been critical over the series. Tark back and check those out. But, you know, I enjoyed him in the role in this particular movie. And I enjoyed the movie in its entirety as well. I thought, like I say, it had the atmosphere and it really brought it and full circle as well. So, yeah, really enjoyed it.
And it opens up with the Cinema City logo, which you don't expect to do horror necessarily. you know, you expect Aces Go Places to follow that logo. But they were the filming or distribution company. Obviously, you got Dean Sheck and Carl Macca, our producers, so, and even Raymond Wong. And it's the same year of All the Wrong Clues. It's the first year of Cinema City, I believe. So Georgie was their boy, kind of. They put him to work. And the movie really goes to work in a very compelling way, because we get this disconnected, fragmented imagery that's going to be expanded upon and filled in, because we get these sights of the puppet theater, and it's done in a sort of ominous way, and there's obviously fragments of violence, seems like the puppets are responsible for the violence, and it's also loud, the sound design is loud, But the movie, it was directed by, let's name drop the director, Peter Jung. It isn't this avalanche of like, oh my god, I slowed down or anything. I think it's very atmospheric the way it opens, because then it then cuts to a birth, a kid is born. So you wonder, like, how does this connect? Is it a curse? Is it reincarnation? Is this infant having an unusual heartbeat? Because the soundtrack is obviously loud in that regard as well. And then the camera, I really love the camera work, actually. It floats through the surroundings, and even during the opening credits, it pulls back through the dark corridor with only light coming from the room at the end of the corridor, which sounds easy, but the heartbeat audio plus the corridor pullback for the credits, I think it already in a few minutes time in the movie showed that Peter Jung... he knows a thing or two about crafting atmospheric horror movies, despite this being, I think, his second movie, and his first was a crime movie. So if a movie is meant to make you stick with it, I think this opening, as fragmented as it is in a conscious way, really makes you stick with it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely nailed it, because that opening sequence, the atmosphere, the heartbeat, the way it's filmed, the way it comes through the corridor, the way it builds, and the tension just sets the film up really nice. Really nice. It was a great opening scene. Wasn't expecting it, didn't know what to take in the movie. As with everything, I usually walk into these movies blind if I've not seen them, because I just want to take it all in, and it was a great way to open a movie. You just got the atmosphere around it. It starts the movie so well. It was a great opening scene. One of my favorites, I have to say, in a long time for an opening of a movie. Bear in mind, this is a 1981 movie, folks. This isn't like, you know, 2018. So we're going back a while. So it's clever. It's great camera work. And yeah, it sets the scene really well.
And it seems like Peter Jung is going for unease to a degree here. That's the goal, because obviously the plot suggests that the old traditional puppet shows merged with the fashion show, which is the modern element. It merges different sophistication, as George Lamb's character says. I believe that just because this is an old tradition doesn't mean it's not sophisticated. And the makeup was very sophisticated, so therefore he argues that this should be part of the audio visual show. And it seems like he's putting on this very loud, like abrasive audio visual show, but in terms of the work he does as the sort of audiovisual engineer. And I like that because I got uneasy watching George work the different projections and the soundtrack that goes with it. So Peter Jung, the director, is continuing to sort of tease that there's a sinister nature, seemingly, even though George is just performing work and like programming this reel-to-reel audio clips with clips of the puppets and clips of astrological photographs and what have you. Then, thankfully, actually, I like this part of the character. George is not a sleazebag just because he gets on with Flora. He's simply kind because she's there seeing him work the multi-vision machine that can project like 20 or 25 different slides at once, which might be obviously obsolete technology, but it looks great for the movie. It's because it's big and also sort of in your face in that space. And but George is just sort of professional, and even though they get on, he's not this like, hey, want to see the back room?
It's not
that. So I mean, that makes him likable, I think, even though that's not how you do movie characters at all times. Like, you're either sleazebag or you're kind. But I don't know. I kind of like that he wasn't. I'm paid. I'm a professional, and now I got a woman here. Hello.
He could have come across that way. What I like about it is, and just going back to the opening scene, because from the opening of the movie, there's no talking for the first 6 minutes. If you notice, there's no dialogue. It's the first 6 minutes and no dialogue. It's all about that. So when you come to something like that and you see him in that environment and you hit with all that sound, etc. and stuff, you've had the visual treat at that opening, but then you get an audio treat as well that comes in and it's still setting that scene really well. And it's very clever because it's playing on you. It felt like you're playing on your senses to some extent. And then obviously George coming into that and stuff, you're right. He doesn't, and thank God he doesn't come across as a sleaze, because that would have just kind of ruined it. He plays it really well. He doesn't come across that kind of person, because you want to be invested in the character and what he's going to go through and the journey that he's going to have. And if he'd been that way, I think that would have taken some of that gloss away from it, and you would care less about it. Well, you'd probably go, oh, it's George being George again, but you'd care less. But as a character, I think he nails it in that respect.
Speaking of gloss, again, it's not always that you notice this, and bless you for not noticing it because you're simply watching the movie, but I notice it because it's so unusual. This movie was shot in sync sound in 1981, and we used to hear in George's voice dubbed and live. He did a fair amount of sync sound movies. We're working for D&B. There was a chance you would do a sync sound movie in the latter half of the 80s, because they sort of championed professionalism from movie to movie, even though not all was sync sound. But I didn't expect an early company to pick a horror movie and record that in sync sound. But it just helps, man, because it is well made. It is a professional movie. And to have this live element, even though we know George's voice, It's way different versus Jackie Chan, for instance, because he always had a different dubber. It wasn't himself. Then when you watch SuperCop, whoa! That's how it sounds like. We always knew how George sounded like. We always knew how Chai and Fat sounded like. We always knew how Stephen Chow sounded like, live or dubbed. So it's not a huge surprise. But I latch on to the fact that this was sync sound because, plus, it's well made, but it just becomes better and more immersive, I think, to hear them all go back and forth, even though it's not a like rapid, like cool and hip dialogue kind of movie. But I don't know, did you notice that, or that was just part of the tapestry of the movie? It simply is there, rather than like, whoa, live George sounds like something.
Oh my god, sounds like George. No, it's good. It's like I say, it works well from a visual and an audio point, and that just adds to that. So I like the journey that he goes upon with the puppets as well, which seems a little bit kind of ridiculous, I guess, if you were to look at it or read the plot on it and stuff about a load of puppets. It doesn't really sound.
Well, it's a genre piece, Phil. It's a horror
Yeah,
movie. So I think
exactly.
it's not meant as a social commentary or not meant as a award-winning drama or anything. So I think that's like, watch out for puppets. That's our social commentary. So I think everyone pretty much knows that. I mean, they are confident that, you know, just going into horror tropes and not having a care in the world as they open up the storage room where the puppets are, the old lady keeps them there. Obviously, the light hits the cobwebs and the dust in the air, and you got ominous lines, not delivered in an ominous way, but ominous lines like, we don't keep the puppets at home, or talk of them. But it's a natural sort of part of the dialogue. It's not scheduled to be ominous, right? There's no like, dumb, she said something now. Dum 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 dum.
That's
Dum dum dum
the
dum.
with that music bellowing in the background. Oh, here we go. No, he's just he's taking us. Yes, and that's what I like about the movie to a certain extent as well. Just that simplicity. There's nothing over egged on it to ram that home. It all seems quite natural.
But then again, it becomes really eerie, I think, because she notices, or someone notices, that George is very good at handling the puppets, meaning that he carries them in a certain way, rather than carrying them, you know, upside down or grasping the head of the puppets. And then there's the issue of him feeling a twitch in his hand for some reason, while they're demonstrating in a latter sequence the whole how far he's come with the multi-vision audio-visual demonstration. And there's some intercutting between, I think, that, but certainly the actor Long Tin Sang's giggling. He plays a mentally challenged character, and then the first accident and incident at the multi-vision stage, and that intercutting between loud noises, they're in a dark room and he's like loud giggling. That is cool stuff, man. That really got to me, because it's meant to feel sort of big and something is gonna happen, but it's not the age-old horror tropes and tools to get there. I thought it was very unique in its own way. It got to me. I mean, I wasn't frightened, but you had an eerie atmosphere about it.
Exactly.
It could be argued that it lays it on too thick, but I don't think it does. It gets there very without it be seeming like, I need to please as a filmmaker. Let's crank everything.
Yeah, that's it. That's why I said he's quite natural in what he does, and it is. It's that atmospheric. He nails it from the start, and then goes throughout the movie. So, you know, and you feel for the character, and you follow that, and that's. You're trying to make sense of it, like the character's trying to make sense of it. But it's clever. It isn't forced upon you, as you say, which a lot of movies do. They tend to force that, you know, and dramatize that. It just works really well with what it's trying to get across to the audience without, you know, slapping it across your face, so to speak.
It's a detective story to a degree, and a fair amount of details. So did you ever think it was overwhelming as it started to reveal what the past event had to do with the current event and all of that, or did you think it was coherent?
No, I think it was fairly coherent. I didn't really, it didn't, like I say, it didn't become too complex in what it was trying to tell you, and he kept the story flowing. So I was quite happy with them as it's being discovered and then as going through it, and then obviously from his point of view going to see like kind of the fortune teller as well, because he's quite, you know, his cop's quite concerned about him, and you know, you should see this person, and you know, it's all foreboding as well, you know, it's creeping up on you slowly and surely, and you're discovering about these puppets and about the events that happen bit by bit, and you're piecing it together along with, you know, along with George. So yeah, it didn't bother me. I was quite enjoying it. I was sucked into the movie, that I wasn't distracted by it, or it was a distraction as such. It was just the plot line that I was following.
Yeah, he gets that balance right, director Peter Jung, because we need a character to spell out where we are in the mystery, but he gets that balance right, that he gets it done within discussion between characters.
Yeah.
So it's not terrible exposition in terms of why these dates align and what does the comet have to do with it. And he keeps seeing these fragments of the past events. And that felt very confidently delivered rather than making it too easy for us. It wasn't that. I mean, it's clearly delivered, but it's not giving us the sort of cheat for the movie or anything. It's just naturally sort of delivered. And even when George goes into more hysteria and obsession about what this all means and what he needs to do to break the cycles of fate, which is all I'm going to say on it, because if you find it, then you should see it without any spoilers. And that obsession is okay. I mean, it's not acting and dramatic touches that's meant to elevate the movie to award-worthy drama. But knowing that George can be very lifeless sometimes and not always excelling at the cool and wacky, going for hysteria, he does decently enough, I thought.
Yeah, exactly. Because, yeah, that could be, we could be in trouble. Because, yeah, George, you're going to have to act here. That could all of a sudden derail the whole movie, let's face it. Because it is, you know, hysteria. He plays it well. He gets away with it. He does the job. And maybe, you know, maybe it shocks you to some extent because George Lamb plays it well, but he acts really well in this, and that's the thing. There's, again, and I've said it before with George and stuff, there is something there that, you know, and we said it right at the beginning with the boat people, there is something there with George that, you know, he can do it. And this movie, he does, and he delivers that because there is different facades to his character and stuff that he has to portray, and he goes from that journey and starts out as a certain character or part of that character, and then he goes through all those emotions to the end. So yeah, I enjoyed his performance, and the hysteria didn't put me off either, which was surprising.
I have no other notes other than the movie usually goes for, you know, ambience and not effects on gore or what have you, but it does have one big sort of special effects sequence in the middle of the movie where George is electrocuted again on the Multivision stage, and then there's some seemingly, you know, some essence from him to the puppet is transferred, and all of that is crude, but it's loud and abrasive. And for me, Phil, maybe it's because I'm old, I grew up on old style special effects, but that sequence worked for me because I understood the concept. It didn't need to be more slick than that. And because Peter Jung intercuts further fragmented, eerie and loud imagery from the old night, the night of the murder, I think that sequence works very well. And I've not seen much akin to it in other Hong Kong movies. That's why this always stands out, that it has that sequence, and it's kind of neat, actually.
Exactly. I concur, and as we're both old, though, there you go. Older, I mean, so how I still love Logan's Run, and that's you know, dodgy at times and stuff, and I'd still take that with a pinch of salt. So let's put it in that category, special effects wise.
Oh, by the way, I remember, Phil, that Cinema City were ambitious. Remember how Aces Go Places was structured with as much stunt work as it had, and they brought in foreign talent. And so I'm not surprised that Cinema City early on went for, let's just insert ambition in our movies and not do a wacky shtick and get away with it.
Exactly. And it's stylish. It's atmospheric. You know, it ends as it begins and stuff. You've gone back to that corridor. It comes full circle, which I loved. I love that. I absolutely loved it. People should just watch this, just, you know, start and the end of it. The bookends and stuff, succinctly, it just works so well, so clever. Won't say anything about it, but I just loved it.
Short movie too, 80 minutes maybe?
Yeah, 83, something like that anyway. But yeah, such a clever little movie. No, it's not going to win awards and stuff, but you know, it's a solid film that people should go and see. A bit of George Lamb, not being lame and delivering something, and what a great little movie, a great little find. So I was happy to watch it and would watch it again.
Well, what also helps, by the way, I forgot to mention, and it's my last note, that not only is it, you know, professionally made, but it's actually the subtitles are largely excellent. You know, only some minor things here and there, but that quality control in subtitles would come and go in cinema subtitles, I should say, because we watched the VCD of it. That quality control will come and go even at Cinema City. So I'm glad that a movie that relies so much on an unveiling mystery didn't have stuff like, you know, someone posted today, it's from another movie, but let's just say the dialogue in Life After Life would be like, that's not possible, and it says, that's not pissable. Like, that was sort of like, come on, because this movie is engaging me, and now I'm going to have to laugh at it too.
Some people like the subtitles like that. That's yeah, why I watch the movies. not for these folks. No. Your subtitles are all good. You are right. It's worth mentioning. So, yeah, if you're after that kind of, no, you're right. They do nail it for the most part. So, yeah, that's pretty good as well, so you can follow it.
The only error I remember was that the Patrick Chess character says they're going to go for a cocktail, and it says cooktail instead. Ooh. So, you know, okay, fine. One error.
I'm picky. Yeah, okay. If you're going to be picky, we'll deduct it half a point. But apart from that.
and yeah, he has a crucial supporting role, Patrick Chess as well. Nick Chess, father. And later a bad guy in Shaolin Soccer too, Patrick. So and obviously a classic actor. So
good actor. And he's got the face for acting. Bless him. Definitely. So you recognize him when you see him.
And as for availability of Life After Life, Joy Sales issued this on DVD and VCD as part of their Legendary Collection range, but it's listed as out of stock now, but hopefully it's available in some shape or form. We watched the Deltamac VCD as that was the only option for a while on disc. They never did a DVD, but the Deltamac VCDs, for VCD quality, they're actually quite high. They always did good despite that format being what it is, so I was happy to watch it even on a slightly bigger TV. I don't have no problems with that. So how did it look on your big TV? This pixelated VCD mess.
No, it looked fine actually. I was pleasantly surprised, because you know, video CDs, but no, it was fine. Like I say, didn't worry me at all, didn't take any stock in that. I was just sucked in by the movie, and you should be too. So yeah, go hunt it down, folks. It's worth it. It's worth the trip.
And that's it for this bonus episode. So we're going to actually do a quick sign-off, but it was fun, Phil. Thank you for taking part in the official, unofficial expansion of Alan Tam Crapping Hour, George Lamb Defaming Sessions, Team Tam, Not Team Tam, Lamb or Lame Show.
It was a beautiful experience. Thank you for having us back. And you know what? It was good to tread the boards with George, and to a lesser extent with Team Tam again. But you know, it was good to see old faces in different places.
We're still Team Tam. Yeah. George Lamb is still lame, and George Lamb is still lamb.
He's still lamb.
Mathematically, it all makes sense.
Yeah. But,
excellent. Thank you very much, Phil, and I've been Kennedy, and with me indeed was Phil G.
Whee!
Yeah. Out, nice and lean. Ep, I think.
Yeah. Excellent.